Well, coming up on today's show, plenty of German luxury brands electrify, a lot of motor racing with batteries, and a little bit of Tesla to finish us off at the end. Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are in the world. Hello and welcome to the Saturday, the 11th of August edition of EV News Daily. It's Martin Lee here with the news you need to know about electric cars and the move towards sustainable transports. And for those that have been listening to a few of the Saturday special interviews, the eagle-eared, if you like, will have noticed that it's not an interview this week, but plenty being lined up for the next few weeks, including hopefully next week or the week after. Someone very high up in terms of one of the charging companies that can give us a real insight into one of the crucial, maybe the fundamental thing about owning an EV, which is how, when, why, and who to charge with. CEOs are quite busy, the thing is, you see, so we're just trying to arrange a time with the diary. I shall say no more. Hopefully it comes off. Plus, I've got some more guests lined up as well for the next few Saturdays. Looking forward to those. Oh, and by the way, hello to our new Patreon executive producers. Those who are exec producers and above, of course, on a Saturday, get some of the extra news that we haven't had time for all week. We do a bit of a deep dive into some of the other stories that we haven't quite had time for on the regular podcast this week. Just one of the many benefits of signing up to Patreon, by the way, everything from $5. Oh, and you know what? If you want to do less than five, that's okay. Of course it is. That's only a suggested amount, but anything from 10 and upwards gets you lots of extra lovely, delicious content. We'll start with another one of these German luxury marks, which must be looking at the Tesla Model 3 and thinking, we better hurry up. It was back in 2016 when BMW first electrified, not full electric, but electrified the 3 Series, they introduced the plug-in hybrid 330e, which of course came with a plug, and that was welcome. But we need a full battery electric vehicles, please, BMW. Now the Bavarians are getting ready to remove the combustion engine altogether, says Adrian Padano for Motor One. And a quick hat tip, by the way, to Motor One, just about one of my favourite sites to look at. They always seem to have the scoops, the insights. Motor1.com, an awesome research if you're looking to add things to your bookmarks collection for your browser. At first glance, this BMW 3 Series looks like a fairly regular prototype of the next gen 3 Series. However, it has the mandatory stickers which say electric test vehicle, and they have to put them on the front doors and the rear bumper, and it's when you see those that gives away the car's true identity. I'm sure the BMW don't like the fact that if they want to test their full electric cars on the streets, they have to have these stickers because it somewhat gives the game away. Well, the fact that it had a closed-off front grille, I mean, there's nothing to keep cool up front, so you might as well close off the grille. Another obvious sign, well, there can't be a combustion engine inside it anywhere, and because it would have needed some sort of cooling. Yes, it does have two big, fat, round, chunky exhaust pipes sticking out of the back. But you know what? They're just silver tips that BMW have been putting on the back of the car so that hopefully we don't notice that it's a full battery electric 3 Series they're currently testing. They're only there to throw us off, much like the Porsche have been doing with the Taycan prototypes. Well, those spies over at Motor One say the electric 3 Series was being tested on the streets alongside their own Tesla Model 3. They're benchmarking against that, so it's really obvious what kind of competition they've got and the kind of customers that are going to be buying the Model 3 and the kind of people who might otherwise have been buying a BMW 3 Series. Well, if you look at those YouTube videos that are starting to come out now, the Tesla Model 3 performance has been getting delivered for a little while now, and people are making YouTube videos of acceleration runs, of track runs, of putting on some stickier tyres and seeing the performance. It's very impressive. It's mighty impressive. Those at BMW will certainly be watching those, ripping them all off the internet, transcribing them, writing highlights for their bosses and their bosses' bosses, and that'll be uncomfortable writing those reports. BMW have this reputation, not only for quality, German quality, but speed and handling. And they have so much brand equity in the bank that they've built up over years of making incredible combustion cars and racing them as well. They've got so much in the bank, and I'm talking about love for the brand, not money, that they can afford to live off that for a little while. But there will come a time when people will say, okay, look, I can go down, you know, I haven't got to wait for a Tesla Model 3 anymore. So this time next year, when you order one, You'll be able to walk into a showroom anywhere in the world, because they'll have them not just in America for test drives, and you'll say, okay, I want this, like you do with the Model S or the X, and say, this spec, and it'll be here pretty quickly once they've worked through that backlog. They are in this window of time when all the other German manufacturers, if they were only a little bit further ahead in their cycles, they could be doing better than they are. Or, here's an alternative point of view. I don't know which way I'm siding on this at the moment. Maybe having all of that brand history makes BMW's life harder. Let me tell you why. If the Tesla Model 3 had done 0-60, the performance, in 4.5 seconds, people would go, wow, 4.5 seconds. That's all the faster you need. Why do you need more fast? If it had done it in 4, people would have gone, wow, that's all the faster you need. Why do you need more fast? The fact that Model 3 performance does it in 3.5 seconds. You see, Tesla have got no history to fall back on, but also they've got no history to fall back on. That can be good and bad, because whatever they came out with was just what they're coming out with. If BMW don't release an utterly amazing Model 3, hang on, slip of the tongue, 3 Series performance car that blows you away, that has great handling like classic BMWs, that accelerates like classic BMWs, they're going to be letting potential people down who compare it with what they've made before. Really interesting. And I would love to know where you stand and how you feel about that argument. A Tesla at an advantage or a disadvantage? Are people like BMW at an advantage or disadvantage? Leave a comment on Facebook or the YouTube comments, or email hello@evnewsdaily.com. Well, from BMW to Mercedes, and the camouflage is gradually coming off the new Mercedes EQ cars. Well, this is the EQC, equivalent to, well, kind of C-class-ish. There's going to be the EQS for the S-class, EQA, we think. The shots have surfaced on Autoblog with alloy wheels, which look like they would certainly fit the EQC. I mean, they look right. They look like the concept car ones, but more simplified. If they have been ripped from another Merc in the range, and I just don't recognise them because I'm not an expert on every single Mercedes combination of alloy wheel on their configurator, then maybe they're just trying them out. Well, the camo colours are absent from the bottom third of the car, the EQC, so we can really start to get a sense of the final lines and the shape of the more of the SUV size of this. Well, some of the panels on previous cars have been really heavily covered and disguised. In fact, they've kind of been padded and they've looked really weird. But that's only to disguise the real shape of each individual panel and the final lines. Now, it's covered in just a tight vinyl wrap. As the dash is exposed, one of the photographers got in the camera right into the window and got a picture of the dash, and it looks really much like the concept car, to be honest with you. There's a massive wide screen. It goes all the way from behind the driver's steering wheel, where the conventional dash would be, but then this really kind of high gloss HD flat screen goes all the way along to the middle of the dash, like a kind of low but super, super wide version of what you would see of a widescreen TV. It looks amazing, and I couldn't quite make out all the little details and graphics. The quality wasn't quite there to zoom in and have a look at things like range or how much battery was left, but I'll go and look at those pictures again, see if I can find any more details for you. Well, Joel Stocksdale for Autoblog picked up on the story, saying the headlights themselves are a unique shape for Mercedes. Starts really thin at the edges and then sweeps around downwards towards the inside. If you look closely, a body panel appears to wrap around the bottom of the grille and match up with the shape of the headlights. That looks very much like the concept car as well from 2016. What strikes me, though, as I look at the Mercedes EQC, is how conventional it looks, just like every other similar car in its class, really. And like every other combustion car that has evolved over the years to accommodate a big old large diesel lump in the front of the car. I mean, the form followed the function. You had, if it was a front-wheel drive car, you had to have a really big bonnet to fit the big diesel engine inside. But rather than take the chance to start again, like the Jaguar I-Pace, like any Tesla, they have purposefully, this isn't an oversight by the way, obviously, purposefully gone for a very conventional shape, as if it could have a big engine up front. In a Golf car park, for instance, you would struggle picking it out. It you wouldn't look at it and go, yeah, that's one of those new fandangled electric Watsits with the funny styling. Just looks like a very upmarket, lovely Mercedes. What do you think about that? Let me know in the comments section of Facebook or YouTube, or email hello at evnewsdaily.com. Should they try and make something that looks different, or are they better off if you're Mercedes trying to sell cars to people who would have bought diesel or gas cars to make it look exactly the same? Less challenging. There's a link to the Autoblog website in the show notes. Well, moving on to a bit of motor racing now. A couple of stories about making electric cars go quickly. Formula One's motorsport director Ross Brawn, who used to be a team principal, of course, with Brawn GP when they won Formula One, before that was sold to Mercedes, and before that, technical directors and led things like Ferrari during the golden Michael Schumacher years. He says, Ross Brawn says that Formula One could go all electric within the next 10 years if, only if, it provides a better spectacle for the fans. And I guess that's what I was just trying to say a minute ago. I mean, Ross Brawn said it far better than I do. If that when the spectacle gets better with electric, that's when we should go to that, because we should be able to watch our favourite motorsport with the best drivers in the world, the fastest cars in the world, and not be making compromises, which Formula E kind of is. According to an ESPN report, a shift to the all-electric F1 cars has not been given serious consideration, but the amount of electric cars on the road is increasing, and Ross Brawn is not willing to rule it out over a 5 to 10 year time frame. The only all-electric series at the moment, well, I mentioned Formula E, which is going to enter its fifth season at the end of this year, with the upgraded Gen 2 car. Twice the power, twice the energy storage, no changing cars halfway through the race. The level of performance will be a significant step down from Formula One, though. And the new cars, even though they're going to double their capacity, have a power output of 250 kilowatts. Still not be doing the kind of speeds that Formula One does. Well, Ross Brawn said this, and I quote, 10 years ago, I don't think many people would be able to predict where the world is now. And therefore, I don't know where we will be in 10 years' time, but Formula One will move in the right direction, end quote. Good point from Ross Brawn there. 2008. What were you doing in 2008? And where were you doing it? And who were you doing it with? But did you think that life in 2018 would be like this or not? I mean, in 2028... maybe Formula One will be all electric. And from one motor racing series to another, and that would be the Jaguar I-Pace E-Trophy. And this is going to be the all-Jaguar I-Pace series that supports Formula E. Ollie Marriage for Top Gear. Lucky so-and-so has got a go in one. He says the I-Pace E-Trophy is a one-make racing series that will support the Formula E Championship at 10 rounds of next season's calendar, starting in December. So those tight and twisty street circuits where a lack of noise is a boon, which means you can go to places that motor racing is normally banned, and the tighter tracks keep the speeds and down and the racing very close. He's having had a go in it. He says it's closely aligned with the flagship I-Pace, the EV400 I-Pace, using the same battery pack, inverters and motors, all the same. So it's still got 395 brake horsepower to go racing with. 0 to 60 is still 4.5 seconds. Top speed, under 125 miles an hour. But that's not what these street circuits are about. They're a bit more kind of point and shoot and go to it and, you know... Stopping is going to be a big thing with this series as well, the circuits being so tight and twisty. And he says, whatever Jag has done to the brakes to incorporate regeneration smoothly has worked a treat. Once I had the confidence to attack the brakes, I always knew exactly where I was with them and never noticed the regen interfering. I'll put a link to that Top Gear article in the show notes. A Jaguar UK press office. If you're listening to this, if you fancy giving a rather mediocre host of a wildly unpopular podcast a go in one of these, he wouldn't say no. Well, thank you so much to George. George Rowe sent me an email because he first noticed this story. Out of courtesy, sent it to me. One of your fellow listeners has been helping us out with the stories today. A Renault Zoe driver is George, and kindly emailed me to say that Tesla's chief vehicle engineer, who left Tesla recently, has returned to Apple. Now, this story from The Telegraph in the UK says he's gone back to Apple to work on the iPhone giant's secretive car driving project. Not that much of a secret. It's called Project Titan. They're making self-driving cars. Sorry, we'll call it a secret for now. Tesla's chief vehicle engineer left a little while ago when the Model 3 ramp wasn't happening perhaps at the speed and pace that some people hoped it would do. trying to be kind here. Tesla poached him from Apple in 2013, saying that he had, and I quote, the leadership and technical talent to deliver and develop outstanding products. Well, he was in charge of overseeing the Model 3 production line, and that was plagued by operational glitches at the very beginning. So maybe he was just unfortunate to be working on it as they were ramping very quickly. If you remember, it was announced when he left, when he took a break, he was simply going to be taking time off to recharge, was the quote. It was speculated at the time that even though Elon had gone back to work on the Model 3 line and Doug was out, that he would come back and that he would come back and, because he's a talented engineer, that he would come back and look after Model Y. I saw people make a very good argument that he would be looking after the Tesla Semi project, and you think that makes sense. But he's turned up at Apple now. When we realised that Elon Musk as well was spending all of his time at the Fremont factory, sleeping on the floor, working 120-hour weeks, I think is the busiest he got, it became clear that perhaps Dougie Boy maybe wasn't coming back to Tesla, and that maybe some people inside the company wanted to be more hands-on, really. But that shouldn't necessarily always be the CEO of the company. And a final story today about charging. And Mark Kane for Inside EVs has been doing some digging, and he's been running with this story that we talked about a little while ago. I had to look back at my show notes and look back at the diary. And it was when I was writing a show, show 183. We're on show 208 now. It was the 17th of July, so just under a month ago. I first reported on a Reddit thread. Now, I did say at the time, I've looked back at the show notes, and I'd double underlined, this is not an official story. This is a Reddit post, right? But it's kind of like fun speculation, but it's not news, as in no one's confirmed it. But this was someone on a Reddit post who is a Tesla owner, Tesla driver, and met at a Tesla supercharger stop he was doing, one of the mobile engineers they have. And he was doing some of the work on the superchargers, and they were chatting, and the Tesla engineer let slip to him that he was doing some preparatory work for adding CCS combo plugs to European superchargers. Take it with a grain of salt, if you will. Well, now Mark Kane says that Fastned, who are the European chargers, charging business, in its business outlook that they published, has noted that Tesla took half of the new pure electric market in the Netherlands, that is Model S and X, still no Model 3s, and having CCS in certain parts of Europe could have a significant impact on the business, as Tesla Model 3 drivers would be able to easily use chargers, not only without a CHAdeMO adapter, but also at the higher power, certainly higher than 50 kilowatts. Well, Fastned said this, and I quote, "An important question for Fastned is what kind of fast charging options Tesla will offer on the new European version of the Model 3. Currently, Teslas are not compatible with any of the global fast charging standards and can only be fast charged using a proprietary supercharging protocol. Adding CCS ports to Tesla Model 3s would give their owners the choice to charge at many other locations, including Fastned stations directly on the highway at very high charge speeds. A decision by Tesla to enable CCS fast charging on its vehicles, especially for the high-volume Model 3, would influence our short-term," they say, talking about their business, "their short-term growth, because half of all EV sales in the Netherlands are still Teslas." Well, I guess I should add, what we are talking about here, I think specifically, is whether Tesla on the Model 3 choose to add the CCS combo plug and not just Type 2. So, when I first saw a Model 3, the one thing I didn't do, because there's, as far as I know, one Model 3 in the UK. So when I went to have a look at it, the one thing I didn't ask the very kind people from Tesla who were showing me around it, can I have a look inside the charge port? Because I'm sure they would have said, yeah, sure. And it would have just been the American connector. However, if you look inside the Model 3's charge port under the flap, there's loads of room in there. Like, I mean, there's more room in there than you would design for. Like, you would design the optimum, the smallest possible space. But they haven't. There is room for something. I'm not saying they will put something in there. There's room for something else in there. And if that was a CCS combo connector, and what we're talking about here is the CCS 2.0 standard, that's the standard which we get excited about. It uses the same connectors, the same combo connector, Type 2, that this new standard gets you up to 350 kilowatts of power, 500 amps of current, up to 1,000 volts. that's when you can charge really very, very quickly. I'll put a link to the Inside EVs article in the show notes if you want to have a look. Drum roll, please. Welcome to the gang, our new Patreon members. Arsen Ivanov, or Arsen Ivanov, is a new supporter of the podcast. Thank you. Seiki Payne, S-E-I-K-I. Thank you for being a producer. Hello to Mark Garnett. He's a new producer of the podcast. And Mark Garnett was one of the very first comments 208 episodes ago when I started this many moons ago. One of the very first people to even comment and say, hey, I found your podcast. It's all right. No, he was very complimentary. He says, very, very nice to listen to EV News. And he's decided to jump on board. And it is a real honour and a privilege to have you as a producer of the show, Mark. Jackie Wheater is a new producer of the podcast. Hello to John Timmis, a new executive producer. You got the bonus content as well. Hi to Chris Benson, a new executive producer. Marcel Lohman and Scott Callahan, both exec producers, and I'm looking forward to making lots of extra shows for you guys as well. There are 207 previous episodes of this that are free, always will be, on all the usual outlets: iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, YouTube, TuneIn and Stitcher, and the blog at evnewsdaily.com. If you subscribe, well, why wouldn't you? Because it means you get them first and free and automatically. And if over the weekend you can leave me a little review, by the way, that would be so much appreciated, because it really helps out. I think we've hit 100 reviews now on iTunes. Thank you for that. Across US and UK iTunes stores when I compile them together. Well, come and say hi on the socials by looking for EV News Daily. Have a wonderful day, and I'll catch you tomorrow.